Welcome to the podcast series, Talking Success, Connecting the Global FinTech Community. I'm Catherine Brassel, and today I'll be speaking with Kevin Hurwitz, multiple Ironman finisher and multiple startup guru and founder of Faster. Faster is an online consumer finance business that offers South Africans access to financial resources anytime, anywhere through innovative payment solutions and through an easy online self-service application. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. How have you been and how's your week been?
Awesome. It's great to have the weather changed in Cape Town in October. To have the cycle tour on Sunday was amazing. To have that kind of activity again, particularly after the pandemic where most people, you know, haven't seen the sunlight. So really special time and great to see so many people about out and about in Cape Town.
No, it's been brilliant. I mean, I myself stay sort of Greenpoint side, and to see the sort of energy, regardless of the fact that they weren't able to have any actual spectators, there was still a nice hum of activity and energy. So I think we're getting there.
I definitely agree. We are getting there for sure.
Fantastic. Okay, so we're gonna kick off straight away with some of our questions. And typically, you know, we like to sort of ask our guest speakers if you can tell us a little bit about your career journey, and really just how you became so passionate about startups.
I mean, I think it's a great place to start, Catherine, because the career journey is often the most interesting part. So mine actually started as a game ranger, believe it or not, completely unrelated to what I've been doing since. And the reason that's relevant is because I think it was able to give me a stab at my passion and really to actually get that out the way. So I think a lot of people kind of spend their time hoping, wondering what it'd be like to work in the field that is your passion as well. And I was pretty fortunate, I think, to get that out the way. I had an amazing time. But, you know, I could put that 18 months behind me and go, okay, you know, what next? So really interesting time. And I think that led into another really interesting part of the journey, which was a move to London. We're talking about the mid-90s, kind of giving my age away. And there I was very fortunate enough to work for a South African who had started a consulting business in the UK. And really the bottom line there was I learned, you know, so much from this guy. And the interesting part of that story was for the first 3 months that I worked for him, and by all accounts, I should never actually have been given a job there. I was just too young. But for the first 3 months, I actually worked for free. I didn't get a salary. And I was able to kind of demonstrate my passion, you know, my commitment and some of my skills. And from there, you know, I actually got paid. So I think that's a lesson as well, particularly in this country, we don't see enough of the kind of intern type of programs and the benefit that that can really deliver both to the organization who's employing interns and to those people who are willing to actually work for free or for a stipend. I think there's massive benefits in that. And for me, it was a great kickstart to my career because I was able to really get at a young age an inside track into really the mind of a great entrepreneur. From that point in London, it was kind of back to South Africa. I had spent 2 winters in London, and that was kind of more than anyone should have to manage. And, you know, by that stage, I had seen enough to realize that I was not a corporate animal. And I think that's really important as well for people at various stages of their careers to recognize in themselves. I really knew after that stint in London that I didn't want to end up a corporate animal and that I was really best suited to kind of working in entrepreneurial environments. I loved it. And I had that exposure, so I really understood that that was for me. So the next kind of part of the journey was really my first startup. And actually, it was also in a consulting gig, but believe it or not, I'd seen this in London. I started off a mystery shopper program in South Africa. And the idea behind that was really to, on the one hand, get hotels, restaurants, service industry, and on the other hand, to get friends, family, people who would go in and under the guise of a shopper actually evaluate and rate the experience. And I eventually sold that business, and also just, you know, starting something from fresh, it just reiterated for me that I loved that space. I loved the idea of conceiving something, having a blank slate, and ultimately building something, you know, from scratch. So really, really good experience. And then, you know, during that process of exiting, I met another great entrepreneur who was a real mentor for me. But by this stage, I was kind of late 20s. And he and I ended up being partners. And we built a B2B play where we were importing software from the US and really selling into the corporate market. And that was, you know, fairly successful business. But, you know, I had my mentor, my partner, really guiding me, and I was learning, you know, a fortune from that process, even though I was very active and a partner in the business. And that was hugely beneficial as well, because I believe kind of this process leads up to ultimately being able to run your own thing, having the confidence to run your own thing. So for everybody, the journey is slightly different. You know, mine was massively beneficial in this idea of having partners along the way who had more experience than me at the time. And now I'm fortunate enough in the position where kind of I can, you know, pass that forward. Having had the experience, so that was great. And really, the next, we sold that business to Vox Telecom at the time. And then I was, you know, fortunate enough. It really, the timing was fantastic. It kind of happened. I exited that deal 3 weeks before the crash in 2008. I wasn't ready to kind of get involved in anything else, and I ended up taking a sabbatical in Plett for what turned out to be a couple of years. Was meant to be 6 months, and that also had its benefit, just to kind of take a pause mid-career. And then since then, I've been involved in consumer finance. I started Wonga in South Africa, that's a story in itself, probably better suited for a beer in the pub. Lots of stories there, lots of exposure to, you know, international investors, to MBAs across the world, and just a great experience at the end of the day.
And just circling back on that as well, I mean, you were there sort of from March 2011, right? So that must have just been such a great time in sort of, you know, that sort of, you know, going into the sort of digital space and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was a great time because, quite honestly, we were inventing the stuff as we were going along. I mean, if you think back, it's 10 years ago. You know, we were trying to make a decision around lending money to somebody that we had never seen before, which was, you know, really challenging. And it goes back even to earlier than that. So it was a great time period, particularly kind of the initial, I would say, 30 to 40 people involved out of the UK at that time. It really was, you know, very special. It was just a process of trying to reinvent. And I guess we full cycle now. We're seeing a lot of that happening right now. I mean, the space has just exploded. You know, fintech wasn't a word back then. And now it's kind of the word of the day. I exited Wonga circa 2014 for a lot of different reasons. And I started, you know, I saw a gap in building a platform. Obviously, when you're doing things for the first time, there's a lot that's overlooked. So we had the experience on the one hand of kind of building quite a large consumer finance business, and on the other hand, having this exposure to tech that was quite rudimentary. So we built a platform with the idea of kind of automating financial services. And we were very fortunate enough to, you know, work with financial institutions in South Africa initially, and to be fairly successful with that. And then, you know, around 2018, we looked around and we said, well, we've built what we think is a world-class platform. We can continue servicing other businesses or we can launch our own product. And, you know, me always being kind of the startup guy, I liked that option. I like that option, and that's what we did, and that was kind of the birth of Faster, that takes us to you know, where we are now, 2.5 years into that project.
No, that's fantastic, and I mean that's such a nice mix of different experiences, and obviously working abroad, and like you say, having that kind of mentorship that side. I mean, I know you spoke a lot about you know, sort of the people that you've worked with. And I was curious to sort of know a little bit more about, you know, the people that you chose to work with. You know, how did you go about creating the right sort of teams, you know, on your journey, and of course then motivating them to sort of achieve success alongside you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. So, you know, that's also a process. It's not something that is innate to one, certainly when you're younger. And I've had to learn really regarding this. But there are a few things I've learned. And the first is that MBAs from Harvard are not necessarily the best people. So you have to figure out for yourself, you know, how it is that you go about, because the team that you select around you is probably the biggest determination of success, quite frankly. Obviously, as an entrepreneur, you cannot do things yourself. I mean, that's a given. Hopefully, everybody gets that. And the second part is that you have to surround yourself with people that you that you could replace yourself with ultimately. And I think often that's a fear with leaders, is that you bring in people that are actually better than you and they might replace you. Well, that's actually what you should be trying to do rather than avoid, because that just makes your life easier at the end of the day. So I've had to figure out for myself how to go about doing that. And generally, you know, there are a few keys to that. The one is network. So, you know, my best hires have come through my network and through working that network from a recruitment perspective. It's not to say that you don't get great people through other recruitment processes, but for me, you know, that's worked really well. And then really to actually focus more on the cultural aspects, you know, the technical nature of someone's job is for me less important. It's you know, how you're going to get along, how they're going to fit in, what impact they're going to have on the culture of your organization, what impact are they going to have on other people, what is their attitude like, and those become really, really key factors. But it is one of the most difficult things that you can do to get right. And it's probably for me the most important thing. Like anything, you know, choose your mentor. Having a mentor or an advisory board or whatever is really, really important, you know. So it's not only your employees, but it's just generally the people that you surround yourself with, your life partner, your wife, your husband. You know, it's human beings generally aren't great at choosing partners, and we have to learn that skill.
That's awesome. And I just wanted to sort of ask, why do you think you are great at the startup? And that's something that you've reiterated that you're very passionate about in business, as opposed to sort of maintaining them for the very long haul. Just to go into that a bit.
So I think that's really just about understanding your personality. And you know, the key metric there is growth. So, you know, I prefer the stage where the target is growing at 10% a month rather than, you know, 0.2% a month. And that's really the bottom line. It's a personality trait, I guess. And I think, you know, the excitement of that and the challenge of that in terms of getting it right is what really motivates and drives me. And certainly that's not for everybody, right? And it's not to say that I'm not good or competent, at least at maintaining businesses, but from a preference perspective, I like that high growth phase where there's a lot of innovation and you're collaborating as individuals. Ideas are generated. There's an R&D component, you know, as opposed to these large organizations where you kind of get lost in the corner and can actually have employees or people sit all day twiddling their thumbs and nobody would ever notice.
So going back to that specifically on the growth, how would you say you measure that success and even find it, you know, being in that startup space?
So obviously that really depends on the business, right? But, you know, what I've learned right from the beginning is to always financially model the ideal scenario, right? So we use financial models, and some of them can get quite complex in terms of upfront trying to understand the detail of the business before you even kind of launch. So there would have been a financial model in our scenario prior to launch. It's not to say that that doesn't change with time, but you know, that's absolutely key to understanding what the metrics are that you're trying to achieve, what the factors are that you have to try and control, and really what it also means to be successful within the context of the business. So I don't think enough startups, founders certainly do financial modeling well enough. Okay. And I think that is absolutely critical for me anyway.
No, that's great. And just to sort of talk a little bit more about that financial modeling, is that something that would obviously tie hand in hand with getting, you know, the right, obviously going back to having the right people on board with you? I mean, are those the sort of people that are, you know, in that financial space working with you doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've always got to have someone in the organization, whether it's yourself as the sole founder, that understands that environment. So as an example, I was talking to somebody who's in their own startup, and he kind of looked at me blankly when I asked him for cash flow statements, you know. And I just think that's massively problematic because, there's just so much that you don't understand, about what it means for business to be successful without those kind of tools. But it just surprises me how many people are in that space, you know. So you can always find those skills whether you're renting them or finding them permanently. You know, there's always that opportunity.
No, and I mean, that's some great advice, because a lot of the people that listen to these, you know, the Talking Success series and listening to people like yourself talk about their journey, you know, this is a sort of great sort of information that would really help guide them. So the fact that you say that people don't even have these cash flow statements available and they're in the startup space is quite eye-opening. Circling back to when you were talking, you know, about yourself, you know, you were given that opportunity back, you know, all the way back in London when you kind of started your career. Back to the sort of the internship element, what would your advice be for people wanting to get sort of in the fintech startup space specifically? Just really advice to fintech listeners who might be starting out their journey and circling back to the sort of internship element that you mentioned.
So generally, startups are cash-strapped. A lot of the time, we're trying to bootstrap these things. And I think that internships are massively underutilized tool in this country. On the one hand, the interns, you know, don't understand the value of an internship. And the other hand, companies don't put in the necessary effort to put intern programs together. And I think this is something that really has to change, because to me, there's no better opportunity for a young person to get exposed to the area that they're interested in, the business that they're interested in, other than getting a full-time job by interning. So for me, it's just massively underutilized, and it makes so much sense Obviously, there's resistance because mostly the concept of internship means you're either on a stipend or in some cases you're not paid. And I think, you know, I worry sometimes about the young guys today that they don't have, they'd rather not work than do an internship. You know, it's some of the things that I've seen, which I think is crazy because the kind of exposure that you get just being in an organization, obviously if it's the right one, is absolutely invaluable.
And I would imagine also that, like you mentioned, from the get-go, you knew very soon on that you didn't love the corporate environment and having that rigidity and having those sorts of things in place, as opposed to being exposed to a startup environment. So I would imagine that if, you know, these corporates are offering internships alongside also startups earning it, startups also offering it. And like you say, they are cash strapped, but it certainly looks like it would be a great, you know, opportunity for people getting, you know, exposure in the industry to have that comparison themselves to sort of, you know, really understand the difference between the two.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So, yeah, my nephew's an actuary. He finished studying a couple of years ago. So for him, it was really important to get exposure to the corporate world, even though I think he sees himself not being in that world long term. And I think there's massive value in that. So perhaps one of the things when I look back that might be a negative is that I never actually had the corporate exposure. And I think there's a lot to learn from that corporate environment as well. So both work. And I think it's really about taking the learning out of whatever environment you're in, but understanding, you know, the time frame that's relevant. So it's about the mental shift and the attitude. So those initial years, and it's really related to age, I guess. If you have the attitude that I'm investing in my own learning and learnership, then you'll be more open to these kind of opportunities. If you have the attitude, I guess, that everything should be given to me on a silver plate and I'm, you know, 24, I've finished university and I know everything, then I guess, you know, interns, yeah, it wouldn't be that interesting to you.
No, it is amazing. And I think, I mean, myself, I remember even at school level, we sort of went in like, well, at the time we called it more job shadowing. And that was a thing in school level. But for some reason, with the universities, even the internship wasn't really pushed. So it is, I think it's certainly, you know, especially in this day and age, something that should definitely be mandated and pushed as far as possible. So
yeah, you know, in American universities and some of the Ivy Leagues ones as well, it's a massive part of the program. You know, whether that's vacation work or whether you're taking a semester off to actually go to another country, if you're lucky enough to intern, it's just part of what is done.
Just, you know, sort of on the hiring side, because obviously that's part and parcel of building these startups and growing them. In terms of the way you sort of hire, you know, how would you say you select people? What sort of personality traits do you look for? And really just sort of what are the kind of questions you ask? Would be interested to sort of hear that from sort of a hiring side on your end.
Okay. So at this point in my career, generally, I'm not doing the technical hiring. In other words, by the time I'm seeing candidates, I'm assuming that, you know, technically they are capable of doing the job that is actually expected of them. And I always start the interview by asking them whether they understand from the previous kind of interviews what the job is actually about and what is expected of them. So that's the first thing, obviously, to just see that there's an alignment and my team have done a good job with that. But outside of that, for me, you know, again, I've mentioned it, the cultural and attitude aspect of bringing people into a tight team is important. And I think it's much more important now that we have this work from home environment and the remote working. Because at the end of the day, we're in environments now that are relatively new for people. And unless culturally your team is aligned, there's very little to differentiate or connect individual sitting at home working from whatever time in the morning to whatever time in the evening to their job. And the result of that, it's also then a lot easier for you to leave that company if there's nothing else other than the day-to-day work tying you into that. So, you know, the interview process is the start of that to make sure that you're getting people aligned so that at the end of the day, if you do have a team building event that's active, you're not having half the people kind of not interested or not wanting to attend because kind of that's not, that's not their thing. So, you know, it goes down to that level even. So, you know, and then you've got a world now today where you have developers, right? Developers are as different to marketing people as anything. So, you know, this concept of trying to, you know, get cross-company teams together all collaborating is just a massive challenge, right? Going back to the interview, what we generally have developed across the different areas, obviously it would be different, again, if it's a marketing person as opposed to dev, but generally there's a problem-solving exercise or two or three that if a person doesn't pass or get through, generally, it's a non-starter. So I think for us, because we're in this high growth, high intensity problem solving environment, that's just something absolutely critical. And those tasks are just geared around trying to test thinking out of the box, being able to problem solve something that's maybe completely unrelated to their job, and brain power.
Of course. Well, you've got actuaries in the family, so it must all be there, hey? No, that's brilliant. Okay, fantastic. And I just thought, you know, I would also ask, you know, it would be great to understand, you know, sort of how things are going at Faster, you know, what's on the horizon, kind of what's been happening. And I mean, like you said, we're at an exciting time now. So yeah, it would just be really cool to sort of hear a bit more about the company itself and how things have been sort of going, because I mean I believe sort of it was founded sort of towards the end of October 2018, so it's been just on 3 years, so happy anniversary on that. And yeah, it would just be great to hear a little bit more about what's happening there at the moment.
For sure. So Faster is, as you mentioned in your introduction, is a consumer finance business. So we're a B2C play. We're focused on the consumer at the end of the day. And what we're trying to do is obviously merge the technology component with some innovation around that consumer space. And a lot of that innovation at the moment, and these trends change, lies in the payment space. So the challenge there is, you know, at a non-bank level, how do we issue credit to the right people, but also allow innovative ways in which our customers and consumers to be able to utilize a different product. So as an example, in South Africa, traditionally, debit cards have been quite a weird concept. They're largely ATM cards where, for many people, they've got issued debit cards and they actually can't use them online. So even if you wanted to watch Netflix at, you know, 50 Rand a month, you can't, okay, because this debit card just won't work. So, you know, one of our products there is a virtual MasterCard where we issue credit onto that card, and then that card can be used, you know, obviously anywhere MasterCard's accepted online, or you can put it into your MasterPass app or your Zappa or SnapScan, and you can use it as you would any other card. So that's just an example of where we're trying to innovate, and I think we are the first example of such a company in Africa, actually, where we actually issuing our own credit off our own balance sheet onto these virtual MasterCards. And I do think even for, you know, across the board, I see in 3-4 years time, you know, people will not carry a physical credit card in their wallet any longer.
Are there any plans to kind of expand Because obviously you're based, you know, you're South Africa based at the moment, sort of maybe going more into Africa or even overseas?
There is always that a desire for sure, particularly in Africa. So I think for some of the product that we have at the moment, there's a massive use case there. Obviously, you know, the macro environment has to be right in terms of, you know, South Africa being quite sophisticated from a banking perspective and you know, the surrounding system in order to do what we do. So you've got to choose your countries fairly well. But absolutely, there is, you know, plenty of scope for that. In fact, I was reading about a new startup this morning that's looking to become the PayPal of Africa. And I think that's absolutely needed, you know, because some of the challenges there are around, you know, payouts and collections. You know, that's always been an inhibitor in the African space. So that kind of play, you know, we're going to see more and more of those type of things happening, as well as we have to remember that more people are going to live in Africa than anywhere else in the world, you know, I think by the year 2025. So, you know, it's such an interesting place to operate. It has so many dynamics, but you do have to be very careful.
Yeah, and also a very young, you know, environment, and generally the uptake of tech will be, you know, a lot more. And obviously just being such a massive proportion that are unbanked, that are wanting these platforms.
There is so much desire. And, you know, we saw this in the mobile technology world, the mobile operators. So, you know, we were still operating with GSM technology, and, you know, countries like Angola had kind of totally leapfrogged that and were on 4G, you know, years before us. And it's the same kind of thing that's happening now. We're seeing, you know, those consumers just mobile first, and, you know, everything needs to be geared around their ability to use tech for almost everything in their lives, actually. And that's just going to expedite. We're not going to go backwards from that perspective. So, you know, between credits, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where everybody needs that. You know, I don't think there's one person.
Unfortunately.
There's not one person in the world who doesn't have some form of credit, right?
Yeah.
Between that and the payment space, I think, you know, we're in an interesting space.
No, we really are. And I think there's a lot to look forward to in terms of growth, of course. So it's an exciting time. And are there any sort of projects currently underway that you can give us a little bit of insight into that's happening right now with Faster?
So, you know, again, I think for me, I have to remind myself that we're 2.5 years old. We are in a high growth phase. And it's actually, it's more important for us to consolidate each area of our business so that that's optimized and operating in the best possible way before we actually get too carried away and start. And I think there's a lot of mistakes, and I've seen this before. Mistakes are made where whether it's product or geography, you move too quickly. So we've spent the last year really optimizing, bedding down, making sure each area of our business is operating really tightly. And now the R&D that we've been doing over the last year will come into play at the beginning of next year. So obviously there are projects. I'm not going to say too much about those. But that's the way we kind of think about it. Let's bed down each area. You know, customer service needs to be spot on. We're getting, you know, in some months, 70,000 site hits. So you just got to make sure your customer service is right, you know, and you don't want to go and expand somewhere else before you can actually service what's happening at home. So that's been the focus, and you know, we'll look to improve on things next year again.
No, that's brilliant. And I think, I mean, there's a lot we can look forward to. So I'm sure a lot of our listeners will keep an eye out. But I really wanted to just say it was so great, Kevin, speaking to you. And thank you so much. You've given some really sound advice. And it really was great to sort of hear about your journey in the startup space. So thank you so much for being on our podcast today.
So thank you, Catherine, as well, for doing these podcasts. I think they're an excellent idea. And hopefully, you know, there's some small thing someone can learn and it can make a difference.
There always is. And listen, should any of our listeners want to reach out to you and connect with you, where is the best place for them to get hold of you?
Kevin@faster.co.za.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode, Talking Success, Connecting the Global FinTech Community. Please follow us on LinkedIn under Talent in the Cloud, or if you're interested in exec talent, expanding your FinTech team, or you yourself are looking for an exciting change in your career, please check out our website, talentinthecloud.io.